Northeast Archives of Folklore and Oral History, accession number 2196, tape number C780.
Now, this is the 10th of March, 1990, and I am in San Jacinto, California, and I'm in the home of Mr. Fred McCamey, and I'm talking to him. Okay, that tells me where I am.
You don't lose track that way.
Now, what were you starting to tell me before I started to put things together?
Well, it's a comical end of it, more or less. Now it's funny, it wasn't at the time, but we were in convoy and we had a captain that was afraid of convoys. At least he was leery of them. So whenever he had a chance, he would hoist a brake down and we'd leave the convoy and proceed on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So we got over to the Mediterranean and he started to pull that, but before he had a chance to pull it, there was a flashlight blinked out of a porthole towards a government vessel. And they told him that he was going to pull a breakdown and get out of the convoy. So when he hoisted his breakdown signal, the word came back, says, you either get in line and stay there, or we'll put somebody aboard at will. So that ended his breakdown. We stayed the convoy.
Were you fast?
No.
I know a lot of vessels that were fast didn't like to be slowed down by the convoy.
No, this was an old Liberty ship.
It was just an old Liberty ship.
Yeah.
Which one was it? Do you remember?
Arthur P. Davis.
Arthur P. Davis.
Yeah, that was the first one I sailed on, Arthur P. I was a carpenter on it.
What year was that?
Must have been 44, evidently.
So you didn't start sailing until close to the end of the war?
About towards the end of it. I had a little over a year of it. But I didn't get in it when it first started. See, I was ex-Navy.
Uh-huh.
I intended to go back in the Navy. And I just never did get around to it, and I got into the Merchant Marine instead. I don't know. I sailed as carpenter, and while I was sailing, I studied. Every time I was off, I studied, and I came back, I sat for my license. I made third mate, and then next time it came in, I made my second mate's license. So that's where I stopped.
And you were second on the daily?
Not on the Marcus Daily.
No.
On the Marcus Daily, yes.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. That was the extent of my time in there in the Merchant Marine. I'd done 6 years in the Navy before that.
So how old were you at that point?
Holy gee, I must have been my 20s, somewhere along in there. Let's see, it's been 40 years since then. I was in my late 20s.
So you were a grown-up as opposed to the kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was supposed to have more sense to get in there, but I didn't.
How far have you got? How old are you now, she said sneakily.
I'm 82 years old.
Well, you're holding up pretty well.
Only the good now, young. Yeah, I'll be 83 in August.
Well, it's interesting that you've got both Navy and Merchant Marine in your background. What was the relationship between the Navy and the Merchant Marine? Was it fairly easy or was it pretty rough?
Well, it was a Navy in peacetime and it was a Merchant Marine in wartime. So it was a little bit rougher in the Merchant Marine than it was in the Navy.
But I mean their attitude toward each other.
I never did pay any attention to that. There didn't seem to be any particular difference. The Navy didn't think so much as the Merchant Marine, but the Merchant Marine didn't bother about the Navy. I don't think that there was really any bad blood between them or anything like that.
Maybe a little bit of resentment about pay scales or something, but
that would you would hear.
But
about.
That was an individual thing rather than a.
You'd always hear that, but that's about the only thing I ever heard that derogatory.
Who was it? I think it was Fred Lewis said every time he went ashore with any of the armed guard, he always tried to buy the beers because he knew they were broke all the time.
Well, I don't know. They evidently were. They got along. So they were not drawing an awful lot of money, but shucks, neither were we. Time to meet out an allotment and sent home, and you just draw what you wanted now and then. So we didn't have a lot of spending money either. But, of course, we had enough to get by, but we still couldn't do everything we wanted. There's a lot of things I saw that I'd like to have had, but I couldn't afford it.
Well, I think that's everybody's story, except for Donald Trump.
Well, he can't afford that wife of his, so I guess he'll make out in the long run. He won't be broke. That's it.
What did you do when you were off watch for recreation? Did you read or play cards?
I studied.
You studied?
Uh-huh. That's the way I got my upgrades and my license. Mm-hmm. I had a friend on the Marcus Daly who was an engineer, and when he would be on watch, I'd use his room to study it. And he'd get off watch at midnight or at noon, and at night I'd study in his room until he got off, and then we'd have a cup of coffee, and then we'd go to bed. But every night, they'd find me in his room studying.
So if he was on the 8 to 12, and you went to bed when he came in, that means you must have been on the 4 to 8.
Go to bed. Yep.
I'm not so dumb as I look.
Yeah, that was it. But, I don't know. He was a heck of a nice guy. As far as I know, he's still sailing. He's been chief engineer a long time ago, but he was, last I knew of him, he was sailing for Richfield Oil Company. Of course, nobody knows where he went from there. But.
So you were friends with one of the engineers, which means that the relationships between the departments must have been pretty decent.
We had no problems. No, none whatever. But
I don't think I've come across a couple of instances of really bad blood, but it was mostly individual, you know. Mm-hmm. Some one guy rubbed another guy the wrong way, and then they blamed it on the department.
That'd be personal. That would.
But you know, there's been some friendly rivalry, but
oh, naturally.
But nothing,
naturally.
But nothing big.
It wasn't anything that really mounted anything that I ever saw. We were all on the ship together. Geez, a lot of times even the black gang would help the deck force out and they'd return it. But if I am not mistaken, a lot of times the part of the black gang was in the gun crew. Mm-hmm. When they got shorthanded and things. They'd help them out a little bit.
Yeah. And then well, Fred Lewis was helping him load, he said. Mm-hmm. And, see, well, was Matheson helping load and then went in after everything?
I don't know just what he was doing, but he was on the gun crew, helping the gun crew.
Yeah.
A little bit interesting, he came back to the midships was the first guy that he carried back. And someone took him from him, and so he just went back and got another one. And when he came back with the second one, I was so busy fighting fire that I got a hold of him. I took him up into my room, made him go to bed in my bunk, and that's where he passed away. You've seen the citation that they gave the ship, the plaque and all. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
I get that might interest you.
Yes, it certainly would.
met it. You're kind of nervous this morning. You just want a little exercise, don't you?
I think she smells all kinds of interesting things out here, like gophers and whatnot.
Oh, that might be a novelty for her, that. Yeah.
So, they called you Mac. Were there any nicknames that floated around the ship that were not from people's names?
Not as I can recall.
It's interesting because all the books I've read about ships, you know, they've always got a skinny and a...
We had a red. Red-headed, freckle face and red complexion, but that's about the only one that I know of. He is an engineer. Yeah. We got a hole in our side one day, messing around. And next morning, about daylight, I was on watch, and I called down to the engine room, and he says, "What's going on up there?" And I says, "What are you talking about?" He says, "The sun's out." I said, "How do you know it's out?" "Well, I can see it." I said, "What are you talking about?" "There's a sunshine in up here on the wall, on the bulkhead." I said, "Boy, you lost your marbles or what?" And he said, "No." He says, "Sunshine, I can see it." And come to find out there's a hole about so big around in the side of the darn ship.
How'd you get that?
We were docking in Naples, Italy. And we were one of the first after the evacuation. And the bow got up to the dock, but the stern wouldn't go in. So they got some hawsers out, and they hooked them up on the capstans. And they started pulling, trying to pull it in. Finally, a guy took a lead line, or what you measure depth with, he run it along the side of the ship, and it was an obstruction. So finally, come to find out that the Germans had scuttled the ship before they left. It was laying on its side. There's a mast or something, and they was trying to push it against that mast. And it pushed a hole in the side of the ship.
Just about how big?
I'd say something like that.
About 5-6 inches?
About that. And, of course, drove a wooden plug in it and came on home, so it was all right.
Some guy down the engine room, sun's shining today, isn't it?
Said, "It's sun up, I can see the sun shining."
That was on the same ship that you were on when the captain wanted to leave the convoy. Because that was in the Med, too.
In the Med, yeah. Yeah. Oh. That captain was quite a character. He was hard to get along with, let's put it that way. He'd been used to sailing on ships off the East Coast that treated everybody like a dog, and he had that attitude. And the crew got so they wouldn't even speak to him. And they'd go into mess and sit down, and they'd sit there in silence. Unless he spoke directly to them, they wouldn't say a word. They'd get through eating, they'd get up and walk out. They gave him a silence treatment, in other words. And finally got so bad that some of the guys caught a little shark. They cut it up in small pieces, laid it out in the sun so it'd get good and rank. And somebody, I don't know who, went inside and they put a little piece here and a little piece there and a little piece here and a little piece there. They were in his room, see. And he'd come in and, of course, back out, and he'd smell it, and he'd start hunting. He'd find a piece, he'd throw it out, still smell it, and he'd finally find another piece and throw it out. And eventually, I guess he got all of it, but to make matters worse, then they took some steel ball bearings. They took the bottom drawer out from under his bunk, put these ball bearings in there. The ship would roll, it all roll over his head. Anyway.
That'd be enough to drive you off your nuts.
Before we got back to the States, when we got back to the States, the chief mate had taken over before we got back. And he was confined to his cabin. And when we got back, they took him off in a stretcher. And he was just loony as he could be. And I don't know whatever happened to him from then on.
Between the shark meat and the ball bearings, they really pushed him over the edge. Huh?
Evidently they did. He didn't have, they didn't have far to push.
Mm-hmm.
They got even with him anyhow for being so mean out to him. At the, he was one of them you seldom run into a type. But
the chief was okay.
Oh, yeah, he was a swell egg. He was a great guy. And he took over. He had to. There was not much else he could do. And he didn't want to because that could be mutiny, you know. And he had all the crew with him, so he did, and he got away with it. It was all right. That wasn't anything else he could do.
So you said that that was an East Coast skipper, and you were... Where'd you sail from then?
We sailed out of San Pedro.
You sailed out of Pedro, and then went down through the canal?
No, never did go through the canal during the war.
What'd you do around the world then?
Around the world.
Down to India and then over and up and into the Med?
Up in the Med that way and then back to the East Coast. And three times around that way. And I've crossed the continent three times and wound up where I've started out. And how can you do that?
Because you...
One, two, three. But always... land on the East Coast, and four times evidently, no, three. There's one, two, three, like that, east to west.
So, where'd you come in, New York, or?
Jersey City Jersey is where City. We originally came in. But, we had to, get away from Jersey City, you know, went down to Philly and down in that way. And that's where I left ship and then came across the country coming home. But,
well, if you did it three times, what else were you on?
On the Marcus, the Alfred B. Davis, and the Ryder Victory.
So the Daily came in on the East Coast too? No, it didn't. It came into Richmond.
No, it came in here in Richmond.
Yeah, but you said you crossed the continent.
Twice. The Daily and the Victory.
Which Victory was that?
Ryder.
Ryder.
R-Y-D-E-R. Ryder. What is Fred doing about this reunion? Is he going to get involved in that?
He's trying to work on it.
Is he going to get involved in these... restorations that they're doing with the Liberty ships and stuff?
I don't know. I've certainly had a lot of contact with them.
Have you?
I went up, I spent about a week in San Francisco interviewing people on the O'Brien. I went up for the Steeman weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lane Victory has been a great deal of help to me, too.
Oh.
I have not yet got to the East Coast to see the John Brown.
The Lane, that's the one in San Pedro, isn't it?
Yeah. They got her at 52 now.
52.
They had her in 58.
Oh. I have received some literature from them, but I haven't visited them yet. I don't know much of anything about them. They just inform me that there is such a thing. That's all I know about it. But, I haven't joined yet or anything like that, so I don't know anything.
I joined.
Did you?
They've got an associate membership for people who are interested, and I figured if I wanted their help, the best thing for me to do was to join their organization as an associate member.
That would be an idea. It sure would, yeah.
And then they put a little squib in the paper, the society's paper,
mm-hmm.
and it said that misspelling my name and reversing two of the numbers in the address that I was interested. Actually, they said that I was writing a book.
Oh.
Which led a lot of people to believe that I was a fiction writer that wanted background material. Some of them were all excited pro, and some of them were all excited con, and I've had to calm them all down and tell them that I'm not really writing that kind of a book.
I have a daughter that's a writer. She works for the Los Angeles Times.
She's a journalist, then?
Well, no, she's a writer. Try to be. She does book reviews. And anyway, if you want to start a business, you pay them and they investigate whether to pay you or not. And she got tired of writing of that, and she's trying to write a book at the same time. And she's writing book reviews and a lot of other, and so she said she'd just retire. Well, they didn't let her retire. They gave her a computer and hooked it up for her at home and said, you just keep writing now, just put it on the computer. You don't even have to come down here. So that's what she's doing. She's still, I guess you'd say, is employed by the company, by the paper. Not the paper, but the people who own the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Not the L.A. Times, but the Times Mirror Corporation. That they owned all the newspapers in the country. It wasn't the L.A. Times, but she has write-up book reviews and things like that for them. And she's quite interested in PEN, P-E-N. That's the Writers Club thing, whatever it is. She's involved in that. But she likes it, so I guess it's all right. Hey, you're a nice feller there, you know it, huh?
Is she a dead dog, huh? let's see. Was everybody aboard your ships white, or was there an ethnic mix?
Well, we had, I think, if I remember right, there's one or two Spanish I served with. And I have never been with a black, on the ship with a black. But Spanish and things like that, yes. But, no, I've never been on one with a black.
Did you notice any prejudice or...?
None whatever. No, there were too many other things to think about. We didn't waste time with prejudices and things like that.
Now, you crossed the equator. Did you have a shellback ceremony?
Oh, yeah.
What was it like?
I enjoyed it. I had to watch at the time. It didn't bother me an awful lot. Of course, I was initiated just like the rest of them. But I think the best part of it was one ship across the equator on, and our baker was a little Frenchman. He's from Northern California or somewhere. And he would get up early in the morning and he'd cook snails and coffee cake and all kinds of goodies that he wasn't supposed to have to. And at coffee time, he'd serve the crew. And anyway, he told me, he says, I don't know about crossing this equator. He says, I'm very sensitive about my body. He says, they go to smear an extra grease all over me or whatever. And says, I'm not going to like it a bit. There's not anything I can do about it, but I'm not going to like it. And I saw they won't do a thing much. He says, well, they better not. So I got a hold of one of the ringleaders, and I told him. And I said, you better lay off that gas. And he won't cook your goodies anymore like he does. As you know, he's not half supposed to do that. He's not, doesn't have to. Kind of grinned, says, we'll look after it. So when they initiated him, one guy took his finger and put a little bit of grease on it, rubbed it on his cheek. That was his initiation.
And everybody else got dumped in gunk.
Oh, yeah. Rest of them got it.
But they wanted to keep their goodies, their bear claws.
They sure knew better. And he would have quit, too. But he was the production man for superintendent for Oral Wheat Baking Company.
Oh, goodness.
When he went into the Merchant Marine. And he had his wife up in, I don't know, somewhere around L.A. or north, was it? One or the other. And anyway, he used to sit out on the deck at night about sundown. Big tears rolled out his face. I sure miss the little Dickens. I sure would like to see the little Dickens. And that's all he ever called her.
It was the little Dickens. I'm going to have trouble with this tape. I just discovered that I've been recording the whole thing with it turned down to slow speed, and I just turned it up to normal. And when I first turn it on, I'm going to have to turn it up to fast to get you to sound normal, because otherwise...
You'll be just well off if it doesn't record at all.
No, I won't. I need this stuff. What about fool's errands that greenhorns were sent on? Now, you were in the Navy and you were in the Merchant Marine. And I know the Navy does a lot of that.
What do you mean? You mean,
The mail boy, the watch for the mail boy. Bring me a bucket of steam, look for the golden rivet, send Charlie Noble to the purser's office.
We didn't do much of that. They never have. They would kind of give a new guy a little bad time, but not very much. Neither the Navy nor the Merchant Marine. There was, in the Merchant Marine, there was too much else to think about. We didn't have time for those kind of things. And two, the people were more sober, I would say, than in the Navy. It was peacetime in the Navy, and they were all out for good time and everything. But of course, the Merchant Marine were too, but they were more subdued. More like an older class of people, we might say. They weren't, but more like older people. I never did.
More responsible than the military? In attitude,
yes. They were doing something that had to be done, and they wanted to get home.
Mm-hmm.
In the peacetime in the Navy, they were just out having a ball. And they weren't worried about anything. But in the Merchant Marine, they had serious thoughts. I don't know. I can't think of anybody that was picked on. One guy was an able seaman that he was epileptic.
Oh.
They used to give him a little bad time, but he'd be standing at the wheel watch and he'd drop right on the deck and have to get a relief up for him. They didn't do anything mean or anything like that, but they used to kind of kid him along about it. But he finished the trip. It was all right. He dropped one night on watch with me, and I looked up. You know, you pick a star ahead of you when you're on course, and you walk around on the bridge, and you keep looking at that star to see if the bow is still pointing for it. You don't go over the wheel and look to see if the man's on course. He just couldn't look at that star. So I looked up the star, and boy, they were just going round and round like this, they moving. So I run back to the wheel and looked, and he passed out right right on the, in the wheelhouse. So all I had to do was call for relief, and somebody else came up and took over. And he had, I guess four or five times that he passed out with it while we were on the ship.
But he just passed out. He didn't have violent seizures.
He'd go into kind of convulsions, just jerking and like that. But nothing ever afterwards. There's nothing afterwards to affect anything. So he finished the whole cruise with us. It was all right when we stopped.